As promised, this evening we're going to begin talking about the 13 principles of faith. That's our goal for this evening. Now, you might be asking yourself, I mean, I ask myself this question, and maybe it's because there's so many things going on in my life that I ask myself this question. Maybe you're less busy than I am, I don't know. But I ask myself, like, okay, so where are we going? What do we do so far already? Let's just summarize what we talked about. Right? Just kind of remember where we're going. We basically talked in the first three classes, I tried to touch on some points about the relationship between knowledge and belief. Knowing about Hashem, proving Hashem, philosophical proofs. Last week we shared the philosophical proofs and talked about how really the Torah perspective that I've come to understand through my studies for this class is that the Torah's perspective and the perspective that we have from our stages is that our belief in Hashem, first and foremost, stems from our tradition, our unbroken chain of tradition, generation from generation, all the way back to Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. We have a very rich tradition that goes all the way back to Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Much of it is recorded in the written Torah. Other parts of it were passed down generation to generation. Some of it was lost at different points. Much of it is recorded in the Talmud. Whatever our old tradition is pretty much entirely dependent now on the Talmud. So that's where our emunah comes from, and we spoke about why that emunah is such an important part of the way we look at our tradition, our understanding of Hashem, is because, and it's relevant to our personal life, is because the way we relate to understanding Hashem's existence and our belief in Hashem is very much contingent on the knowledge that there is a God and that He's involved in our lives and all that, but also the experience that's there. That means that Hashem's experience with Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and Hashem's experience with the Jewish people in the desert, through the whole episode of the Midbar, and all of the Hashem's interactions with the Jewish people, be they distant, be they close, all these interactions that the Jewish people as a whole have with Hashem throughout history, is the foundation of our emotional attachment to the faith. That's a truth. That's a reality. That our emotional attachment to the faith is through experience, just like anything in life. You know, you might know of someone, you may get a letter in the mail, they're trying to raise money for something, they try to hit your emotions. Right? They want to get an emotional attachment. They'll show you a picture of a hungry child in some third world country, you know, that's wearing tattered clothing. They probably took a picture in a studio. But they're trying to grab at your emotions. Right? But that's the way we really move, we really change. Now, of course, God forbid to depend everything on our emotions. That's not the point. The point is, of course, there's the knowledge and there's the study. And God forbid to depend our entire faith on emotion. However, the experience is very important. And to make that an irrelevant individual point is that we need to take that experience every single day. We need to find Hashem in our lives, so that we strengthen our emunah. If something happens, sometimes we have things happen in our life, maybe it's once a week, maybe it's once a month, maybe it's once a year, that could not have happened, there's no way this could have happened by coincidence. Right? The truth is that we live that way every time. Every day. I mean, that our heart pumps, the way our eye sees, the way our brain functions, it could not have happened by coincidence. But the reality is that we are very dulled to that notion, that we think that Olam kiminhago noheg, the world just goes on its normal natural course. Hashem just made nature and Mother Nature has its ways, and just that's the way it goes. You know, there's no God, there's Mother Nature, but at least there's something. But it's just, it's, you know, there's just, the world goes. But sometimes we're jerked, we're taken by an experience. We need to find Hashem in our lives in order to strengthen our Emunah. Not to found our Emunah on that. We believe there's a God because a miracle happened to you. We don't believe in Hashem because of the experience, but that strengthens our Emunah. That strengthens our Emunah. And it's our responsibility, each one of us, every single person, every single human being, especially every Jew, and especially people that are knowledgeable and become aware, and especially people that are coming to an Emunah class, and that are thinking about Emunah, is our responsibility as individuals, every one of us, to make a personal effort to experience Hashem in our lives, to look where we find Hashem in our lives, in order to strengthen our Emunah. Not to found our Emunah on that, God forbid, but in order to strengthen our Emunah. Every single day when something happens, realize that Hashem's hand is involved in our life. Obviously, is involved in all of our physical world, in everything that goes on in our life. Hashem is guiding us. Hashem is involved. We have to, like Elisa said, we have to open our eyes and see it. It's a very important point. We have to open our eyes and see it, and we can't be blind to it.
Bad and good.
I'm sorry? Everything.
Bad?
Everything, of course, absolutely. Everything. We have to realize Hashem is guiding us. Right? So that's the practical, if we were to kind of to take all the discussion that we had the last 3 weeks, to put it in a practical nutshell, I would say that practically speaking, our Emunah is strengthened through experience. And it's definitely our responsibility, I'm speaking to myself, but we, all of us, we simply, if we want to get anything out of what we're talking about, it needs to be put into practice. And the way it's put into practice, one way it could be put into practice, is to just open our eyes. Make a deal with yourself. You don't have to look for Hashem in the cracks and in the places where it's difficult to see Hashem. But in the places that it's obvious to see Hashem, at least let's acknowledge the places that it's obvious to see Hashem. Right? If we acknowledge Hashem in the obvious places, we'll come to acknowledge Hashem even in the hidden places. And we'll see that Hashem is really guiding us in every way, and that will strengthen our Emunah. That's an important, that's a practical note, an important practical note. And beyond that, we spoke about in the first class that there's a relationship between Emunah and Bitachon. And sometimes, if you want to really, lift some weight and stretch your muscles and really bodybuild Emunah, the way to do that is to exercise Bitachon. Sometimes you need to know that you don't have to go to the nth degree with everything. It's okay to rely on Hashem. He thinks, man di yayv chaye, yayv mizone. The one who gives life gives sustenance. Hashem doesn't want us to die. Hashem didn't create us to starve and die. Hashem created us to flourish and grow and to realize and to come to the awareness that we are fragile, we're vulnerable, and we're dependent on Hashem. And Hashem will guide us. Hashem will help. Hashem has many ways to help us. Don't worry. Doesn't need our help. Doesn't need our help to help us. It doesn't mean we sit back, God forbid. Of course, I'm not saying that. Of course, the person needs to put in the effort. But at a certain point, don't think at a point that you need to put in all the extra, 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 extra effort as if you don't do it, it won't happen, or the world will fall apart. Messianic complex that you think you're the Messiah. If you don't do it, the world will come to an end. Don't worry. There's a God in the world who takes care of things. So that's just another point, is that we have to act on our bitachon. We have to not only exercise the Emunah and see Hashem in our lives, but we need to, practically speaking, we need to exercise our bitachon. And to know that you put in a certain amount of effort, you did your hishtadlut, whichever way you want to say it, you did your effort, you put in your day's work, Hashem will take care of you. Hashem will let things play out. There's so many variables, we're not going to be in charge of all the variables in the world. It's beyond us. And we need to exercise our bitachon. And we'll open our hearts and allow Hashem into our lives. Otherwise, we become stone-hearted and nothing can seep through. unless you're like Rabbi Akiva, then you think the water seeps through, and then slowly you become a stone of a heart of flesh. But if you're a heart of stone, and you keep strengthening your heart of stone, Hashem will never come in. Won't be able to come in. You never let Him in. So we first have to start seeing Hashem. And then when we start practicing seeing Hashem, then we're ready to really go the next mile, a little bit here, a little bit there, and exercise our bitachon. And trust in Hashem. And pray to Hashem. Say, Hashem, I rely on You. I trust in You. I know that you don't have to necessarily say it, you can think it, but you know, you trust in Hashem. You know that Hashem is there. I rely on Hashem. Hashem will take care of it. Everything is for Hashem will guide me in the best possible way if I realize that He is involved in my life. I realize that I let Him in every aspect that I can. The more I let Him in, the more He'll come into my life, the more I'll see Him in my life, the more I'm dependent upon Him, and the more I'm dependent upon Him, the closer I am to Him, and the closer I'll be guided, and so on. So that's Emunah Bitachon, we spoke about it. So now we're going to start the Yud Gimel Ikrim, the 13 principles of faith. Now, time is short. I'm leaving in the middle of June. I don't have time to go through all the 13 principles of faith. There's several interruptions and so on. So we're not going to be able to get through all of them, but it's worthwhile starting the discussion, at least. Maybe we'll pick up after the summer. Maybe we'll start a new topic after the summer. I don't know yet. We'll see how it goes. But at least it's good to start the discussion, especially before Shavuot. Next week, Yirat Hashem, we're going to read the 10 commandments on Shavuot, and we're going to hear the words, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, I am the Lord your God who took care of Mitzrayim. And tonight, we're studying about the first principle of faith, which is derived from that verse. It's very appropriate. So maybe next week we'll talk about Torah Min HaShemayim. So we're in the spirit of things. It's related to Shavuos. Gives us some time to think about things and try to make it more relevant, even though we may not get through all the topics. Okay. So, 13 principles of faith. So I want to let's use some Hebrew words instead of English. Let's change the word from principles to ikarim. The word ikar means, you could use the word principle, or let's use the word foundation. Okay? An ikar is a foundation. Now, the great philosophers, the great Jewish philosophers in Spain in the 1300s and earlier, the Rambam and so on, they all spoke and going back to Babel in the 900s, 800s, 700s, you're going back there, everyone spoke about this concept of Ikarim. Ikarim means the foundation of the faith. So there's a book actually called Sefer HaIkarim, the Book of Foundations. It's important to mention it because it's a very important work in our discussion of philosophy and the dogmas of Judaism. Sefer Ikarim was written by Rabbi Yosef Elbo. Rabbi Yosef Elbo was born in 1380. He died in the middle of the 1400s. This book was composed when there was he lived in Spain, and he was a prominent philosopher and religious leader in Spain at the end of the 1300s. In the year 1412, 1414, there was a great debate between the Christians in Spain and the Jewish scholars. And Rabbi Yosef Elbo, along with another 20 major scholars, they had an ongoing, one of these great discourses. And we have to understand something. It's just a historical note. I'm not a great historian. Other people are much, well versed in history than I am. But historical note is to realize that for Spanish Jewry, the offensive that the Christians were putting on against the community, debating the faith, was a very, very critical thing. It wasn't just like, come to, the tank and watch, a debate between, this group and that group. And you want to come, you don't have to come. It's like a sports event or something. It wasn't like that. This was critical. This really spoke about the, you know, is the Jewish faith true? Is the Christian faith true? And if the Christian faith is not true, then we're going to persecute Jews, or, you know, Jews are going to be at the hand of their neighbors. And there were blood libels going around, and there were always pogroms, and it was a difficult period as they were coming toward the expulsion in 1492. So Yosef Albo, in this process of confronting the Christian, you know, debating the Christian community, composed this book, Sefer Yikarim, so just to understand where this is coming from.
Has it been translated?
I believe so. I believe it's translated. Yeah. And what I want to share with you with just a few notes from here is what he begins in chapter 3 and chapter 4 of his first section. Okay. I'm going to cut to the chase. So he says, what is an Ikar? An Ikar foundation, because you think about it, don't we? If someone came and told us, like the Rambam himself says in the 13 principles, if someone came and told you, don't worry about that part of the Torah, this part is more important. You know, so how can you focus on certain parts of the Torah? We know that anyone who denies even one letter of the Torah and even one statement of our sages and so on is, you know, is out of the camp. You know, he's out. He's shunned for denying, you know, accepting even one part. Let's say in the Torah it says that there was a woman, there was a man by the name of Lotan, and he had a sister named Timnah. That's a verse in the Torah. Who cares that Lotan had a sister named Timnah? Who cares? Let's say I don't believe that Lotan had a sister named Timnah. Is my faith shaking? You know, I don't believe it. But I have to believe, accept every letter of the Torah. So what does this mean that I have a foundation in the Torah? That I'm saying, these are the things you need to believe in. What do you need to believe in these things? You need to believe in the entire Torah. What does it mean you need to believe in principles? So that's what Rabbi Yosef Albo is coming to explain. What does it mean, a principle of the Jewish faith? So he says, a principle is a pillar upon which, if you would take away this pillar, the faith would fall apart. It doesn't mean other things are not all true. Everything is true. But let's say if I don't believe that Lotan's sister was Timnah, so the world goes on. Okay, either I do believe it, I don't believe it, then I'm denying part of the Torah, fine. But does the faith collapse? Is this part of the actual structure of the faith that we believe with perfect faith that Lotan's sister's name was Timnah? No, that's ridiculous. That's not part of the actual structure that if I take it away, the whole faith would collapse. So that is a principle. A principle is the very foundation that without it, there is no faith. That is the faith. You can't take it away. If you take it away, the faith collapses. That's how he defines a principle of faith. So then he lists the 13 principles of the faith of Maimonides, which I'm not going to go through right now. He lists the 13 principles, and he says, how did the Rambam come up with 13 principles? These 13 essential foundations. How is it possible? 13 essential foundations. So let's look at it. I'm talking about two chapters over here, so I'm just kind of putting it together. He says, if you'll tell me that, let's say so we believe there's a God. That needs to be one thing. You probably have to believe in prophecy, right? Because if you don't believe in prophecy, then where did the Torah come from? The Torah was written by a bunch of old men, you know, 4,000 years ago, and was just given over as a book, as a tradition. And you have to believe that God communicated to man. So you have to believe in God. That's part of it. That defines our faith. Existence of God. The understanding that there is prophecy, and that the Torah is divine, that there's a divine message. If you don't believe that there's a divine message, then there's no religion. The religion is based on the fact that there's a divine message. And believing in reward and punishment. The entire Torah speaks about reward and punishment. From the very beginning, Adam sins, God punishes him. Go to the end, you know, Moshe hits the rock, he didn't go into Israel. You know, you have all the Reward and punishment is throughout the Torah. If you don't believe that Hashem is involved in rewards and punishes people, then there's no principle to the faith. There's no faith. It all falls apart. But let's think about it, he says. The Rambam also includes in his principles of faith that you're only supposed to serve Hashem. And if you don't serve Hashem, you're only supposed to serve Hashem and no one else. He says, okay, that's an important thing, not to serve someone else. But let's say, and it says, like, we're going to read, Lo yelecha Elohim acherim al panai. You should have no other God. He says, okay, that's for sure something very important. But would the whole Torah fall apart if I served someone else? Let's say I served God, and I served someone else. Would my faith fall apart? I still believe that there's a God. I still believe that there's Torah from Shemayim. I believe that God spoke in prophecy to Moshe. You know, just because I abandoned, why would the Rambam include that? Why would the Rambam include the fact that you're not allowed to serve any other thing other than God? Is that a principle of the faith? If I take that away, let's say that wasn't in the principles of faith, but could the faith stand even if I would serve God in something else? No, could not.
No.
Why not?
Absolutely not.
Why not? Because
you're told
not to say Lashon Hara.
Yeah.
If I say Lashon Hara, the faith won't fall. Like, if I... Let's
yeah, but
this one
was not
let's say you...
No, that's why it's a principle.
That was right.
It needs to be a principle because without it, you would fall. Most it's not one of the basic pillars. It's not a pillar.
Why not? Why is serving God and or serving something else? Why is that? It's true. If I bow to a rock and not to God, and I don't pray to God, then that's a terrible
You're
thing.
Not
but why would the faith fall apart? Why would the faith fall apart? Let's say you don't believe in a God, the faith falls apart. You don't believe there's a divine message. If there's no divine message, there's no Judaism without a divine message. There's no Judaism without a God. There's no Judaism without prophecy. These are all essentials. But this Judaism, there could be a Judaism, there could have been a Judaism where there's a God, there's a divine message, there's prophecy, and you can serve, and you're not allowed to serve a rock. But if you serve the rock and not God, the religion is still a religion. You violate a mitzvah of the Torah. But is the religion like a different religion?
Well, religion is independent of you as a person. But you as a person are not anymore part of it.
Why? Why should that be? Why if I serve a rock, I'm doing a terrible thing? Why? Because I'm not devoting myself to the one source and one cause of all existence.
Right.
I'm directing, channeling all of my efforts and energies to a subordinate source. Let's say that I pray to an angel, or I pray to a great person, I pray to a human king, or something like that, or even to an inanimate object. But does my faith collapse? Why does the faith collapse?
It falls apart because the whole faith is predicated on one God, the only God. So if you add one or more others,
I believe there's one God. I didn't take that away. I didn't say the rock is a God. One second, I didn't say the rock is a God. I'm worshiping the rock. Maybe the rock is an intermediary between me and God, like the golden calf. I'll pray to the golden calf. I'll serve the golden calf. And the golden calf will be an intermediary between me and God. It's not that I don't believe in God. I believe in one God. There is one God. There is Torah Min HaShemayim and so on. But there's an intermediary.
So then you're a Christian.
Right.
Okay, so there's something... Christianity has other elements that's actually further away than that. It also believes in the, you know, corporability of a God into a human being and all that. But there's other elements of that.
Once you introduce this second whatever it is, the intermediary, then you start to pull in things, correct?
But I'm not saying there's not one God. There is one God. Yeah. Hopefully you won't leave this class thinking that you could do this. But I'm not saying that the Torah wouldn't command against it. The Torah would. But is this actually part of the structure of Judaism that you can't? Do you understand what I'm saying? I'm not talking about whether it's a terrible thing. It's a terrible thing. But is it part of the very structure of the faith? That if you take away God, there's no faith. If you take away Torah, there's no faith. If you take away prophecy, there's no faith. If you take away the violation of not serving the rock, you know, as an intermediary, is there no faith? I don't know if there's no faith. It could still be that there is a faith. I believe in the one God. I believe in the Torah and so on. But I use an intermediary to communicate.
But your actions are driven by your faith. So if you do that, that'll lead to all other things.
Then your faith is questionable.
What is that?
No, but we've been taught.
I'm sorry, what do you mean, Donnie? I didn't understand. I'm sorry.
I'm saying your actions are driven by your faith. So if you believe that this rock is an intermediary, you're bound to do other actions that would obviously not be right. It would support that theory. If you believe in a rock as opposed to Hashem.
No, I don't believe in the... I believe that the rock is my intermediary to Hashem. I take an icon, a representation, and I say, you know, I can't see Hashem, so it's hard for me to pray to Hashem. When I pray to the rock, so then I think of it as, you know, as my...
Isn't it?
Yeah, but why is that?
Because we're told not to. No, because Aaron, Aaron's fate was bound by the...
No, ladies and gentlemen, I'm not suggesting that it should be allowed to do this. All I'm saying is, it's definitely forbidden, and it would always be forbidden, even in what I'm speaking about. I'm just saying, is it the very structure of the faith?
Yes.
Why is it the very structure?
I think because all the other foundations are dependent upon it. Right. And so without that one, then all the other foundations collapse.
What foundation? What, for example?
Because every other premise that you hold by, if there's any kind of God that has power beyond, you know, the physical realm, then it's, you know, it's like serving two masters. You can't serve two masters.
It's not a master. It's an intermediary. For example, let's talk about this.
But it can be your master.
Yeah. If there's no foundation below below the house, the house would collapse. But it could be that the house can continue. Let's say this doorway should have doors, right? If I take off the doors, the house will still stand as long as it did, whether it had doors or didn't have doors. If you take away the foundation, the house is going to start sinking, it'll collapse, it'll rot away, and it'll get destroyed. But if I take away the mitzvah, not to bow to an idolatry, will that actually destroy the structure of the structure of the thing?
It's the termite that will destroy the structure.
You need to have between you and one God. Regardless of whether it's an intermediate or subordinate to your one real God, if that fidelity is taken apart, then you no longer have a relationship to the two.
Well, if there's a conflict between the intermediary and God, where does that put you? Where does that put the faith?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry?
Yes, the intermediary is like an amazing thing that they can communicate with God.
Well,
mm-hmm.
But that's the whole basis of the Christian church.
Mm-hmm.
You don't pray to the God.
Mm-hmm.
You pray to a priest who will then take your message. At least that's my understanding.
But even for in the Jewish faith, when you have a prophet, saint, you pray, you say God in front of this saint, and pass me through them. Accept my supplication, accept what I'm asking for through them. With some specific steps.
Yeah.
Okay,
I don't want to, I'd be happy to deal with that question. But if you don't mind me excusing that question right now, it's a little bit off topic. But I want to come back to the idea of the structure of the thing. Yeah, I'm sorry, at least that was it.
Well.
No, I'm not. I'd be happy to answer. I just don't like. I don't want to deal with that right now.
Question,
I'm sorry.
If you have
any
questions, yeah.
Okay.
My question.
No,
do you want me to address it right now? You feel like I'd be happy to address it. I don't want to. If you don't mind, I don't want to address that one. Yeah,
okay.
Sorry.
Basically, I just wanted to expand on some things that people have already said, but that first of all, if you're talking about taking away
a being that's going to collapse the house immediately, or a being where the house will stand for about 5 minutes until there's a strong wind, or a being that will just slowly take down one part of the room that will knock down the rest of the house. But I think also it's a matter of focus, that if you're, well, first of all, we're given this very special and unique relationship with God, and that's throwing gifts back in his face, saying that, like, even saying, even if it was in, with good intention, saying that, like, who am I to talk directly to God? I'll talk to someone lesser than God, and they'll talk to God for me. But that's not the system that God set up, so who are we to say that we know better? But then, also, if you're spending all your time focused on this intermediary, even if you're saying this intermediary with the best intentions, this intermediary is going to deal with God, your focus is still completely away from God all the time.
And will that shake the foundation of what the faith is about?
Yeah. It'll make you lose track of what the faith is about.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And if not directly for you, then certainly for the next generation.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's say we take that, so let's follow that, this thought that's being shared by so many here. And let's say, okay, so it's something that will slowly take apart, like you said, like with the foundation of one room, and then, you know, slowly the house will fall down, it'll demonstrate a lack of fidelity between you and God, and so on. So if that's really important, so shouldn't the Rambam also include the concept that, like, God is present amongst the Jewish people, that there's a Shekhinah, that there's Hashem's presence amongst the Jewish people? That's not one of the principles of faith. That's not one of the principles that the Rambam has enumerated in his Ikarim, in his foundations. It's not there. That there's a presence, that the Shekhinah is amongst the Jewish people. That Hashem's presence is amongst the Jewish people. Or, for example, the concept of it's not explicit, but even though it's included in punishment and reward, but the Rambam doesn't speak explicitly about free will. Free will is understood. It's obviously, Hashem will reward and punish you according to your choices, and therefore we have to talk about the ability to choose freely, and that's included, but it's not explicit. It's implied in the Rambam's principles of faith. Now, if the Rambam is coming to talk about the very essential, important, big tenets of Judaism, the concept of free choice, we'd all agree, I'm sure, is the very, very basic tenet of the Jewish faith.
Free will is given to all humans, not only Jews. So that's why.
Okay. Okay. So it's not part of the faith.
It's not only.
But reward and punishment is also a matter that corresponds to all of everyone, and that's also included in the dogmas of the Jewish faith.
Yeah, but it's more.
Or belief in a God is also something that is at least expected, or expected of every human being.
So in a relation, that's something that articulated Jewish. Yeah, world to come, Jews, non-Jews, creation, Jews, non-Jews, whatever. But the relation was exactly Jewish. That was made Jewish face. Now that's the relation.
Okay. So you're saying that the 13 principles are can be extrapolated and expounded upon from the revelation? Is that what you mean to say? That they're related to the revelation, which is exclusively Jewish?
I would say not just the relation of Sinai, but continuous relation.
Like the experience of the Jewish people.
Continuous relation is certainly not perfect.
I would say, I don't think the Rambam needs to, have us believe in things that we already know about. I mean, the reason why the principles of faith is because we have to involve ourselves intellectually with understanding them and relating to them. But to know that the Rambam is something that we know already, I think the Rambam tells it, that there's God's involvement in our life, and therefore the Shekhinah is not something he tells about either. But these other aspects are things that we have to obviously contemplate.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you're saying the Rambam was coming to tell them it's not readily apparent.
Right.
Something that's
the cataract experience, intellectual efforts.
Okay. Well, I'm glad I opened the discussion. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Are both of those two things constant?
Which?
the Shechina as a presence and free will?
Well, that's a big question. That's a loaded question. But the first, the Shechina being with the Jewish people, that, you know, there are different levels of Shechina, so that's, you know, ambiguous. Whereas free choice and free will is something that, you know, 99% of the time, you know, except for under certain circumstances, Hashem will pick man, you know, and you know, but yes, it's pretty much a constant, right? Okay, I wanted to just throw this on the table and get everyone thinking about the concept of the Ikarim. What are they coming to do? So to think about that and grapple with that a little bit. What Rabbi Yosef Albo does is that in chapter 4 here, he introduces that there are really three main principles of the Jewish faith. Number one, Aleph, Mitzvus Hashem, the existence that there is a God. Number two, that there's prophecy. And number three, that there's Torah Min HaShemayim, that Hashem has a divine message. He says his structure is the following. There are found, like kind of like a tree, if you will. There are the very deep roots, which we'll call Ikarim, with the foundation, the foundational roots of the faith. Then there are Shorashim. There are the appearance, you know, not the deep, you know, the surface roots, thank you, the Shorashim. And then there's Anafim, there's the branches that come out. The entire faith, he says, is based on these three very deep roots, these Ikarim. The three Ikarim are, on one hand, the existence of Hashem. Number two, the prophecy that Hashem communicates with humanity. And number three, Torah Min HaShemayim. And then each one has a subordinate, a subset of beliefs. For example, if we talk about the existence of Hashem, then the subset of that will be His perfection, that there's one God, and so on. And then from there would flow, for example, that Hashem created the world. That would be a branch, right? Because if you believe that there's a God, and then the aspects, the elements that flesh out that picture, the surface roots, if you will, like a tree of the surface roots, those are related to the fact that Hashem is a one God, and that Hashem is perfect, and that Hashem is benevolent. And then from there comes that Hashem, from there would grow forward like a branch, if you will, a practical belief that Hashem created the world from nothing. Because Hashem is capable of that. There's only one God. He's all-powerful. He's perfect. He's benevolent. So of course Hashem created the world from, could have done it, and indeed did create the world from nothing. And then he develops the entire system of understanding of foundations, of principles of faith, of Ikarim, based on these three, he branches up. That's his system, that there are three major roots. By the way, he goes on to explain something very fascinating. He says that on Rosh Hashanah, when we daven, on Rosh Hashanah, we have the three sets of prayers in the Musaf: Malchuyot, Zichronot, and Shofarot. Malchuyot says God is the king of existence. Hashem is the master of the world. That relates to the foundation of Mitzvus Hashem, that Hashem is present and He's the master. Beyond that, you have Nevuah, that's Zichronot, that Hashem remembers humanity. Hashem doesn't forsake humanity. Hashem communicates with humanity. That's Zichronot, as is represented by the various verses that we talk about, that Hashem remembered Rachel, and Hashem remembered, you know, Sarah, and Hashem remembers the Jewish people. And then the third category is the Shofarot, which we know the Shofar was blowing at Sinai, and that represents Hashem's thrusting the divine message into the world. And that's Torah. By the way, it's also representative of Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. That's obvious. Abraham is like the Avot, the forebearers of the Jewish people. The first is, Abraham stood for the fact that there is a God in the world. Yitzchak, specifically, stood for the fact that Hashem remembers the Avos. He remembers and He communicates. Why is that? Because Hashem remembered Yitzchak when he was on the altar. and he's just about to die, Hashem remembered him, like the angel called out, and Hashem like seeks him out. And there's more to develop on that point. And then the last one is Torah, and that's Yaakov. Yaakov is representative of Torah, it's not for right now, but those are the three principles. This is where I want to pick you up. Explain the Rambam's position of what he's doing with the Ikarim. Let's take a look at side one to get this. Take a quick look, please, at the top section on page one. We may say in defense of Maimonides that he did not intend to make principles and foundations of any of the commandments of the Torah, for he did not number among them any actual commandments, as I noted. With regard to beliefs also, we may say that he did not choose principles among them in order to say that we are obligated to believe these principles, but not others. His intention, rather, and this is coming from the Abravanel in the 1400s in Spain, his intention was rather correctly to guide those men who did not study Torah deeply and did not study or serve their teachers enough. Since they could not encompass or conceive all the beliefs and opinions which are included in the Divine Torah, Maimonides selected the most general beliefs in such a way that all men, even the ignorant, that's me, could become perfected through their acceptance. So the rabbi wanted to make all the messages of the eternal Torah at hand for everybody. From this point of view, he called them principles and foundations. Adapting it to the thinking of the student, while it's not according to the truth itself. What we mean to say by that is that a foundation is really maybe like Rabbi Albo says, that it's really the three principles, the three major principles. But the Rambam enumerates 13. Why is he extrapolating and enumerating so many, building from the three? Because he wants to make it accessible to the student. These are not necessarily the root foundations. It could be that only three principles are the root foundations. But the Rambam wants to develop it so it's available to every person. This is the reason that he did not mention these principles in his book, The Guide, right, The Guide to Perplex, in which he investigated deeply into the Torah faith, but mentioned them rather in the commentary to the Mishnah, which he wrote in his youth. The Rambam was careful to categorize his writings in different books. In the Guide to the Perplexed, which is truly perplexing and deep, so if you want to take it up as a challenge, not late night reading, but it's very, very deep stuff and very philosophical. Over there, he doesn't mention principles of faith. The Rambam doesn't mention the principles of faith in the Guide to the Perplexed. Where does he write about the principles of faith? In his commentary to the Mishnah, which is usually going to be studied by even children, you know, that are studying Mishnah. So the Rambam made it accessible to everyone. So that was his point in terms of foundation. So again, the Rambam's 13 principles, this is the point that we can walk away with tonight, the Rambam's 13 principles are to be studied by everyone. It's supposed to give us a key into all of the various aspects that make up, in its totality, in its elaborated sense, the faith. And at the bottom over here, this next word actually from the Rambam himself, he wrote the following. When all these principles are faith in the safekeeping of man, and his convictions of them is well established, he then enters the Klal Yisrael, into the general body of Israel. And it is incumbent upon us to love him, to care for him, and to do for him all that God commanded us to do for one another in the way of affection and brotherly sympathy. And this, even though he were to be guilty of every transgression possible, by reason of the power of desire or the mastery of the base natural passions, he will receive punishment according to the level of his perversity. but he will have a portion in the world to come, even though he may be of the Poshei Yisrael, the transgressors of Israel. So the Rambam says, these are the principles. The Rambam himself wrote about the 13 principles. That these are the principles that if you understand and relate to and believe in, you are in the fold. You are in Klal Yisrael. And about you is said that you are a person that we are to embrace. Even let's say, such a person, let's say he doesn't eat kosher, he speaks Lashon Hara, he doesn't keep Shabbat, he says, whatever transgressions you can think of. You know, the guy doesn't put on phone, doesn't wear tzitzit, you know. But he believes in God. He believes in Torah Min HaShemayim. He believes in prophecy. He believes in Mashiach. He believes in the resurrection of the dead. But he's overcome by regular life. You know, he gets involved in the world. Such a person is still in the fold. However, a man who breaks away from any of these fundamental principles of belief, then of him is stated Yotza Min HaKlal. That's what we say on Pesach night. Hotzi Atzmo Min HaKlal LeRasha. The wicked son has taken himself out of the fold. He has gone out of the general body of Israel, and Kafar B'Ikar denies the root truths of Judaism. Putting together the Avravanil and the Rambam, putting that together, the Rambam wrote this for every person, for us to understand what are the elaborated truths of the Jewish people, of the Jewish faith.
What about them?
Yeah, a Jew that you notice, by the way, I want to point out something. The Rambam's careful not to, we touched about it a little last week, but the Rambam says, and this, even though he were to be guilty of every transgression possible by reason of the power of desire and the mastery of base natural passions and so on. So on one hand, he could be over all these averos, all these transgressions, provided that he buys into the 13 principles of faith. Those are really his bread and butter. That's basically what he believes. He's within the fold. But someone who does not believe it is out of the fold. What does it mean that someone doesn't believe it? Is it that they were never raised with it? They never went to a Jewish day school? They were misled by their religious leader? They thought that there's nothing more out there? They were, you know, what are we talking about? That's really a matter of great discussion, but and it's a matter of actually some debate, but for sure somebody who rejects it and has the opportunity to study it and takes it and says, I'm not willing to buy this stuff, and I'm not willing to develop my theories around this, I'm rejecting it, then yes, they're out of the fold. But someone who is interested in engaging in that study, is interested in getting involved and thinking about it, and struggling with it. You know, I do believe, I don't believe, I'm not sure. Person's working with it. That's just like everything. Let's say, we're all struggling with things. And it's okay to struggle with foundations of belief and to work on them and to study them. It might take a lifetime. But a person's involved. A person's engaged on their level. But if a person is outright not interested and rejects it and is not willing to consider it, he's just, you know, denies it, then of that person is definitely out of the fold. The Rasha who comes to the Seder says to us, Ma ha'avodah hazot lachem. Why are you doing this? What benefit is it to you? Right? The Rasha is not interested. He's mocking in his question. Right? The Chacham is asking the same question, and the Chacham is saying, tell me about it. Like, let me learn. I want to understand it. And that's already a Chacham. Right? This one. The Chacham is very close to the Rasha. It's a matter of approach. Right? The Chacham, we teach him everything. We try to include him. We embrace him. The Rasha, we reject. We reject someone who's rejecting the principles of faith. Yes. He's not within the, you know, he doesn't have any standing in the Jewish faith. He, being born Jewish, is not It's the first step, being born Jewish. And many Reformed Jews are not born Jewish. But being born Jewish is one step. The next step is to infuse oneself with the Torah philosophy. That's what being a Jew is about. It's also a responsibility of coming to terms and understanding and learning and investing and coming close to Hashem. Yeah, absolutely. Strong words? No?
You know,
no? Strong words?
You know,
it is what it is.
Sometimes.